All right, now we're on.
Yeah, sorry. Too much to expect. All right, let's call tonight's meeting to order. This is the February 28th regular meeting of the North Bend Planning Commission. Tonight we have a joint meeting with the Parks Commission and also including a public hearing. We'll start with taking roll call and we'll start with the Planning Commission. James, do you want to start off?
Yeah, Commissioner Bober is present.
Scott Greenberg present. Commissioner McFarland.
Commissioner Ryan.
And Commissioner Tao serving as acting chair for tonight's meeting. For the Planning Commission, Commissioner Miller may be late, or she may not be able to make it at all, so she's not currently in attendance, and Commission Chair Heller will be absent tonight. So we'll consider them both excused from the meeting tonight, unless Commissioner Miller is able to make it later. And our Press Commission colleagues.
Nina Wright is here.
Ryan Duncan is here.
Mark Carrera.
Kyle Braun.
And staff, Mike McCarty.
Great. Well, welcome to our Parks Commission colleagues. I know we had a joint meeting sometime before the
months
end
ago
of the
or
year.
Something, yeah.
Yeah, a few months ago. And I found that to be very interesting and informative. So looking forward to tonight's meeting as well, although at least right now we don't have any members of the public for the public hearing, but maybe that will change. First item on the agenda is approval of tonight's agenda. Is there somebody who would like to make a motion? Commissioner McFarland is moving.
Ryan seconds.
All right. We have a motion to approve the agenda, and it's been seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. Motion carries. The agenda is approved.
Point of order, Mr. Chair. Sure. I remember having this concern at the last joint meeting. Should we be having the Parks Commission mirror us, or are we conducting this as one? I don't know what the protocol is for that, right? Because we don't want to leave you guys on the sideline. You have your own meetings that you call to order and have an agenda. So I wasn't sure about that.
Yeah, we could just follow that same motion with the Parks Commission if you guys are fine with the agenda as presented.
Do you want us to move it?
Sure.
So move.
Okay. And everybody in favor of that?
Aye.
Okay.
Okay, so the next item is approval of the Planning Commission meeting from January 24th, which I don't think the Parks Commission will have to take any action on. Is there a motion to approve
so moved.
The minutes?
All right, Ryan, settled.
And moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Opposed. Motion carried.
I'm saying Ryan because I've been the unknown seconder for months.
I have to say who I am.
All right, next item on the agenda is public comment on non-agenda items. We currently have no members of the public here to speak, so we will move past that and get right to the public hearing.
I'll give just a brief introduction.
Okay.
No members of the public here, but two items on the agenda for the public hearing. The first one is our trail and bicycle route map. So what this is it's a combination of two existing maps. And apologize, this wasn't available at the time of the packets. Our GIS person is catching up on a lot of things. But we have it for you now. That's the first page. And just for the sake of comparison are the two maps that it's combining following that, our trail plan map and our bicycle route map. And this came from direction from council members that they wanted to see both provided together in order to be able to see the combined network. If you're going somewhere on a bicycle, you want to see off-trail or off-street routes as well as on-street routes to see the whole network. The further idea of this that our GIS person is still going to do is to actually break this map into thirds so that we'll be able to zoom in and see it a lot easier, because that was one of the earlier worries that we had with that. What you're seeing is all the information, and we just haven't broken it up yet because that was additional work that he had to do that we didn't have time for the meeting. But the information is all there. That is the first part of it. Second part of it is amendments to our residential recreation and common space standards, and that's in Chapter 1725 of our municipal code. So this as well came as direction from council members. And the start of this was concern about how some of our residential recreation areas within subdivisions were being developed with stormwater features and floodplain compensatory storage areas incorporated into those. We've had a couple of developments that have maybe taken advantage of that opportunity a little bit too much. And, for example, the new addition to E.J. Roberts Park is kind of a sunken hole. So the bottom of it's a little wet in the winter. They did that to make compensatory storage in order to fill other areas of the site within the floodplain within their development to raise those houses up. So that's great for the houses. It's not so great for a public park. And so city council members said, let's deal with that. We didn't have specific standards before that said, no, you couldn't do that. So that's what this amendment is about. And as we opened it, there were other things that came from council members and through the review with the Parks Commission that we felt were appropriate amendments. One of those was to clarify and direction from council members about having an option for the city to take on parks within subdivisions as opposed for larger parks that are over 2.5 acres, as opposed to the prior standards or existing standards, which just call for the city to take that on. That's a policy call, and Commissioner McFarland provided some comments about that that I think we'll want to have discussion on tonight. But that was initial direction. Other things are how we consider the size requirements for residential recreation areas. Right now, there's two standards that are applied together, which creates some overlap and confusion. So what it says is it's either based on the number of units or the size of the development in acres. So when there's a conflict between those two, which standard do you use? And so what the recommendation here is just to go with the number of units, because that's more directly tied to how many people are needing the recreation space, regardless of how big the lots are. A few other amendments, clarifying some of the requirements for multifamily. Right now, multifamily requires residential recreation space, just like single family. In some circumstances, like in the downtown, as we see properties redevelop, it's really not possible to provide recreation space within an existing building. So provided some clarifications for that to encourage redevelopment within downtown, which is what we want to see. And then just echoing some of those same requirements about no stormwater and no floodplain compensatory storage with multifamily, as we see with the amendments for single family. And then just a few additional cleanups in there to eliminate redundancy with other code sections. And some lighting and some trail amendments. The trail standard currently is 8 feet, and the recommendation in here for our major trail corridor, such as the Tanner Trail, is to go to 10 feet, which enables us to go after grants from state and federal grant providers that require a standard of 10 feet. So that's about a summary of the proposed amendments.
Thanks, Mike. So tonight's a public hearing on these proposed amendments. Do we need a motion to actually open the public hearing?
We should do that, yeah.
Okay,
please. It's a motion. I think you, Mr. Chair, just going to you open.
Okay. So we'll consider the public hearing now open. There are no members of the public currently in attendance, but we'll keep the public hearing open for the remainder of the meeting and the discussion in case somebody comes and has something that they want to contribute. But seeing nobody at this point, I think we can move into our own joint.
Maybe just a suggestion, we could close the public hearing, and if somebody shows up, you could reopen it.
So is there, from a protocol standpoint or process standpoint, are we unable to have questions and discussion with the public hearing open?
It just seems
funky to close it and then reopen it. I would just propose if there's no reason that we can't have questions and discussion, that we just keep the public hearing open until we know we're done.
As long as we remember to close it.
Okay, so Mike, anything else to add as by way of introduction or context?
So both of these commissions We wanted to get you together because a public hearing is required before final action and recommendation onto the Planning Commission, and it didn't make sense to have separate hearings. We wanted to bring you together, and that way there's good opportunity for cross-pollination and joint deliberation. So after that, what we'll be looking for is each commission to then provide your final recommendation.
And we'd like that tonight.
We'd like that tonight if that's possible, but if you feel like it's necessary, we can carry on to our next Planning Commission meeting time.
Okay. So we'll open it up to any questions or discussion. Who would like to go first?
I guess just a process question to start is, do you want to start with the map as you presented and then
sure.
move to the document? Is that work for?
Sure.
Yeah, the one on the top there is new. So you see there's a number of edits that we made in combining them as well. Just making some connections that weren't previously on there, adding some trail connections within the Tennant Trailhead Park, out at Meadowbrook Farm, added a bicycle, or changed the location of the bicycle lane that goes out to the north towards Moon Valley. It previously went on Thrasher, and what is that, 14th at the north end of city limits? And we brought that down to 8th Street because that's a more of a neighborhood, less high traffic route to get to the same place.
And that's exactly what I want to ask a question about. So are these, in that case, is that a proposed bike lane?
Yeah, that is. The intent of that is that eventually we'll be striping and signing those.
Okay, because I said they don't exist today. So
yeah.
Oh,
that one actually, yeah, that's a correctional note. That's shown as an existing bike lane, and there's
right.
nothing there yet. So, thank you.
Yeah, both on, well, using the city names Pickett and Sixth.
Yeah. Yeah, this is kind of hot off the press, so
sure.
I do appreciate any corrections that you guys notice. Mina also noticed that there was a correction to the location of E.J. Roberts Park with the new addition from the River Glen subdivision.
Question to the Parks Commission. Looking at Tanner, at the area around Tannerwood Park, going up Tanner Road, it looks like we're developing a multiple-use trail across 134th eastward into the southern line of the Sigali project. Is that right? Am I reading that right?
That will be a trail connection across
okay.
there.
Everybody I talked to is totally unaware that that road is going to be opened up.
So there's not a road there, but there's a trail. You're talking about the north end of the future subdivision?
I'm talking about the dotted line across 134th and then connecting to a solid line.
That's by the back side of the storage unit there.
Yeah, I'm not aware that's even be
that's
existing.
A gravel road. Oh,
well, I can share that the dotted line that's running east-west across the private property, that will indeed be an extension of the existing trail that's in Tannerwood because that was part of the requirements for the Tanner Falls
yeah.
subdivision.
Yeah.
Well, but I don't know what's the is there going to be actual formal trail down Tanner Road, or it's just indicating a route to walk?
Indicating a route. So,
well, I live on Tanner Road, and
mm-hmm.
the dotted line is 130 southeast 134th, and where the solid line begins, there's nothing there.
So the solid line is an existing trail at the north end of the Tannerwood neighborhood. Currently, it just dead ends.
The dotted line is a solid.
This is the one that I'm saying, Dick, is going to be new trail. That's part of the requirements of this subdivision.
Yeah, but this is an existing road to these
yep.
residences here. Okay.
Yep.
What I'm saying is that the solid line doesn't exist, and everybody I talked to says it's not going to exist. There's not going to be a through road there.
Not a road, but a trail.
And the trail was built with Tannerwood, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's an existing. The trail is actually no road.
Okay, guys, I don't see it there.
Up on the legend.
I don't see any trail at this place goes. So, so the commission knows the Sigali property is going to be widening Tanner Road, and they're going to add 5 feet to the west side of the road, and they're going to create a walking path down Tanner Road up to the old Mountside Road that was washed out. That's to allow for traffic functioning coming out of Sigali, and they're adding they're going to leave 5 feet on the existing pavement, and they're going to stripe it in blue for walking traffic. Does that concern you in terms of your plan?
Is that considered a trail corridor?
It's not a trail. It's a widened shoulder in some areas, and then a separated asphalt walkway in other areas where there's space to provide a separation. Yeah.
There's no curb and gutter going in, though.
Right? There's an extruded asphalt curb in areas where it's directly adjacent to the road.
What they intend to do is to add a curb adjacent to the running surface of the road to protect walking traffic. It's going to be like a yellow painted curb.
This was a condition of the preliminary plat approval for the development. So we can't require full frontage improvements, full typical sidewalks, curb gutter, planter strip, where it's off the property of the development. Mm-hmm. But this was a safety condition to provide increased pedestrian safety and connection down to the intersection of North Bend Way, where people could cross and get on the Snoqualmie Valley Trail or the Tanner Trail.
So they're making that improvement all the way to North Bend Way.
Okay, so here's what I want to just advise the Parks Commission, that this is going to be, could very likely be an additional hiking opportunity, even a biking opportunity, that would get into the Sigali property by everybody that lives there, could use that as a bike trail or a walking trail. And it would be going in where the old Mountside Road, where it was blown out years ago. That'll be the west side, the west entrance into the Sigali property, right?
Yeah.
So that's the neighbors are talking to Toll Brothers about this. That's just why I know it, and I just want to let you know that it's going to be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that might open up a lot of access through Sigali out to the west.
Does that old road right away provide access down to the water, too?
No, it does down the water. That's where it stops. Yeah.
So, Mike, in regard to what Commissioner Ryan's speaking about, does the dotted line that's indicating a future trail, should that be extended along Tanner Road to that point?
Yeah, there's kind of a transition. We're not trying to show everything on here, and in some cases, it's just a sidewalk. So as future development occurs on Tanner Road, maybe redevelopment of some of those homes. John Day Homes is doing a two-lot short plat, for example, along there. Conventional frontage improvements will be required in association with that. This was an interim measure to increase pedestrian safety when the new subdivision is built. But it's not necessarily a trail, but we did show the connection because we've got an off-site or an off-road trail on there. We wanted to show that it's actually connecting down to the Tanner Trail, Snoqualmie Valley Trail.
So the trail is going to be on the east or the west side of the road?
Yeah, on the east side of the road.
Okay.
But it is then a great first step for improving future connectivity if you're thinking of it as a pedestrian or whether you're or a biker itself, even if it's not an official trail corridor.
And it will be going to a park. This isn't on the map. There's going to be a park established as part of the Sigali. North of the old road and west of the current Tanner Road, there's about a 20-acre parcel that's going to be set aside for park. It might not be overnight parking, but it'll be a destination point to get to the water and go to the park.
How large is that park?
It's about 2 acres, I think.
I guess it's 2 acres. I said 20. It was probably...
Honestly, I don't remember.
That didn't sound likely. But so it's a neighborhood park, right?
Yeah, to be owned by the city.
Yeah, okay.
But there's big trees in there, and it gives a few people a chance to
questions regarding the map?
It's just a personal preference. I still struggle with the colors, but I understand it's complicated, given that we have to still the open space in green as well. And I just kind of
second that. I don't know if we could maybe make the like a red, like we need to get some contrast going with the line types and the solid colors, I'd say.
Yeah, so I had a question and maybe a suggestion that maybe helps that. My impression of this map is that it's rather agnostic to jurisdiction, right? We're showing King County, we're showing Snoqualmie, North Bend. To the degree possible, could we not just eliminate those lines and symbols that really aren't applicable to what you're trying to really, because that would really help the trails in the pop out if we took off city limits, urban growth area.
Or at least shade them out quite a bit.
Well, here's making something, I'm just, you look at that alone's got three more colors and dotted lines running through it. And so when my brain goes and I'm trying to, for instance, follow the maroon future trail, and then I run into, what appears to be black city limits.
Yeah.
But my brain first, before it recognizes the color, just sees dotted line, and so I start following the dotted line, right? So if I don't see those, particularly I don't see those as pertinent to this map, and so I would suggest that those go away. I don't know how that relates to some of the other things on here, like, public facilities that are being called out. Certainly parks should be called out, but if the other public facilities, don't really count in that regard.
Yeah, I think some of that will help when we do the blow up of the map, because then we'll be able to highlight the trail corridors or widen those marks, and we can reduce the width of the other marks that are not essential. Yeah. But yeah, I'll provide that comment to our GIS person.
And thank you for that work thus far. And it is much, much better than what it was.
Yeah.
One can actually start visualizing there being a loop that goes around North Bend.
Right.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's really
simple. So I think, Rob, to your point, if this is GIS, are some of these features, are they layers within the system that can just be turned off for our devices?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think that would clean the map up.
Yeah,
and then even like turn the river into like a much lighter blue, the water.
Yeah. The other thing you could do is take the forest green, the dark green, parks open space, and maybe make it the same color as, the Rattlesnake Mountain area. Because the point is, that's all publicly owned.
Yeah, I agree.
Open space and parkland. It doesn't really matter for this purpose who is responsible for
it. And that goes to jurisdiction again, right?
Right, exactly.
This is agnostic to jurisdiction, then take those indicators out.
Yeah.
Yeah, show just what we're trying to show here.
I think it would help.
Any other discussion, comments, questions on the maps? Let's come back to it, but if not, we can move to the document itself.
Sure. Has the Parks Commission made an index to all the various parks?
We have in our parks element of our comprehensive plan a kind of a comprehensive inventory. So there's a description of each park, its size, and its facilities. Is that what you're looking for?
I'm just asking the question for the potential public user. Is there an index to help them locate the various parks on the map? Mm.
The city website has a link to each park.
Okay.
So that's a great starting point.
Yeah. In regard to that question, would bring up the idea of are you targeting at least at the larger parks an actual trails map, so that if I'm at this park, I could kind of figure out where I could go.
Yeah, that's been a recommendation of the Parks Commission for a number of years.
Yeah, I would,
We've got that on our Parks Capital Facilities plan. Yeah.
Okay, it is on.
So at some point, that'll be a project, and we'll be able to move forward with that.
Great.
But having this initial work done
will
help.
Yeah, spur
that. Yeah, exactly.
Great.
Mike, one just other addition or comment. The Sideview Neighborhood Parks are labeled Sideview Park, which is different than Sideview Park. So just, it's probably a space issue you want to add that. You see those bullet, the boxes?
Nope. Right there, it says New Sideview Park. Is that the one?
Yeah, New Sideview Park. New Sideview Park. Isn't it technically Sideview Neighborhood Park?
I will find out. I actually don't know what the formal name is.
I think that's what they call it. I'm not sure, though. I think that's what the sign says when I drive by it.
Okay. Thank you.
Mike, is there anything you need to do of introduction to the document itself, or do you think that's covered in your earlier introduction?
Yeah, I think we could probably jump into comments. So I included some comments that Rob McFarland provided in the packet itself, and then as well, one of our parks commissioners was not able to be here tonight, so he's got his comments. I passed that around.
That'd be a good starting point. Rob, do you want to go through your, because that'll probably generate some conversation, and then we can just go from there.
Right, and so hopefully you've all had a chance to read those, and so really instead of me kind of drilling it through, I'll accept that you've read them, and I'll just re-emphasize that what's in my head, having all the way back to when I served in the Parks Commission and through years on the Planning Commission, is feeling that we have a philosophy of why are we doing certain things with parks, why do we have certain sizes and such. And so that's a lot of my what's guiding my comments here. So it's certainly not for not wanting parks. I want all the parks, but and more of them, but more about thinking about the responsibility for ownership, maintenance, visibility, and so some of what you're seeing in there is when we're talking about the very small neighborhood parks. Some of my thinking there is again just a reminder that what in my mind generated those was the Growth Management Act, which helped push us to smaller lot sizes. And in regard for that, we said, well, but you need more play space within those smaller neighborhoods. And so there's a balance there. I'm not saying eliminate mini parks. I'm saying keep in mind that that's kind of how that generated. And I know when we made changes 10 or so years ago to this element, that one of the changes we made was putting the mini parks into the hands of the HOAs formally. It was already sort of happening, but we changed the code to say that's going to be an HOA responsibility. Some of the feedback that we got, I certainly got in particular, was wait a minute. If we're responsible for this, then we ought to have the right to wall it off, so to speak. You know, they're taking the liability, and they got concerned with what happens when kids from other areas. Well, for the most part, with the ones that I'm aware of, they're not trying to police that, but I believe most of them have posted that it's a HOA park, right? So there's this little bit of disconnect. And that, of course, goes back to, you know, funding as well. How are you going to pay for these things? You're either going to pay through taxes, HOA dues, some other, right? Everything has to get paid for. So we can, as we've been on this great trail of working cooperatively with the Sideview Metropolitan Park District to turn those over, that's a great way. But then, of course, we're passing levies very well to support that. I think, you know, that's been very effective. So kind of what I'm saying within that is let's make sure we keep in mind that balance. And so, for instance, when I saw the notion to also then any 2.5-acre park, I'm saying, well, wait a minute. This is starting to feel to me like this is not a park that's just about that small subdivision or a neighborhood. This is a more citywide use, and it doesn't feel right to me to put the burden on just those homeowners for maintaining it. That's kind of the comment that I'm making, and that's kind of what's flavoring through my notion. So with that, I'll back off.
When I was reading through it and reading through your comments, I'm with you in a lot of that, but when it comes to the bigger one, what I think is missing here for me that would sway me one way or the other mm-hmm. is the intention of the park. If it's a park buried in the middle of a development mm-hmm. that's not necessarily, there's no open parking, you know, street, if it's a park with like a street parking, not a parking lot.
Right.
It's more designated to the development itself. Mm-hmm. And so to me, then the HOA should be maintaining that. It's not really a public mm-hmm. space that the city as a whole, taxpayers,
right.
should be paying for. But again, that goes back to to how it's designed more. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a park in the middle of a development that has public parking, has restrooms, has...
Right. Or connected to our trails.
Right, exactly. Right. Then that should be paid for by the taxpayers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there should be city ran.
Yeah, and I think so. Another question I have is, it seems like the way things are structured now, it doesn't acknowledge like the adjacent subdivisions that mm-hmm. would share potentially these parks.
That's a challenge that we've heard a lot from.
Yeah. And I'm not sure there's a good mechanism for neighboring HOAs to mm-hmm. partner in maintenance and cost sharing and those kind of things. And so from a policy standpoint, I think that is part of what the issue you're raising as well, correct?
It absolutely is.
Whether that specifically, but I think it's, where we have discrete subdivisions that are essentially closed to other neighborhood access, that's one thing. But where we have adjoining subdivisions with shared streets and access points and those kind of things, I think it's much harder to partition those off for HOA management.
Well, I suppose the other thing I'd throw into the mix, the thought process here is and kind of as James was talking, it kind of the reminder that looking at what's behind what those sizes, what's the thinking, what's the rationale for requiring, a certain number of acres or certain number of units, we're requiring a park of a certain size. And so again, it's somewhere in that balance. And so I do get that as Commissioner Bovers is suggesting that if it's really, truly only going to be used by that neighborhood, there's a good rational argument for keeping it within, the HOA. And so maybe the language that is saying, well, it's kind of a council decision, maybe that gives the freedom for that analysis. My biggest point here is I want everybody to just be conscious of the choices we're making. Mm-hmm. I don't feel strongly on which way. I can be swayed either way as well. I just want us to be very conscious of the choices we're making.
Is there any precedence for how this has been a burden on the HOA? Is there an example in the city where this thought comes from?
Well, I have an example just in our neighborhood, Cedar Falls neighborhood, where Cedar Falls, there is a neighborhood park that's maintained by the Cedar Falls Homeowners Association, but subsequent to Cedar Falls being built out, there's neighboring subdivisions mm-hmm. that are accessed through the same roads that go through Cedar Falls, and through quirks in the size of those subdivisions, they're not necessarily required to build neighborhood parks for those subdivisions, therefore the Cedar Falls HOA small park neighborhood park becomes a shared park for literally hundreds and hundreds of
and there's not a mechanism that we have to require that new subdivision to
right
help with the funding, right?
Correct.
There's been discussions on maybe cooperative, but there's there's no hammer that can be used.
And we actually looked at that. We considered that with our attorney, and we could not. There was not a mechanism to require that.
That's why I said
that.
We didn't have the mechanism.
Is there a mechanism for if the city maintains the parks, is there a mechanism to bill HOAs for kind of their proportionate?
Wow. That's a different take. Yeah.
I'm just trying to look at it from a different perspective.
I'd like to see that debate on because I guess they live in aren't we paying taxes? Why are we now paying an assessment?
Yeah.
Especially then you get into that same argument, right, where the neighboring HOAs are using their parks. Who's using the parks? Okay, if the HOA is going to pay that assessment, do they get to lock it down?
We want that one to come before your
opinion. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Sure. Well, with the liability, has there been a cost burden associated with that?
There will be over time with the wear and tear of the equipment.
Yeah, I think there's both a cost and probably a liability risk issue, too, with non-HOA members using the park and potentially getting hurt.
Yeah. And then just real quick, just a question. So I don't have any tons of experience with how HOAs are funded, but the establishment of, say, the installed landscape, does it become more expensive over time, or is it more expensive in the first few years as stuff get, you know, problems get flushed out, irrigation gets fixed, plants get replaced, and they're now established, there's not a big water need.
Those aren't going expensive, sure.
To where after 5 years, the maintenance cost starts to go down because stuff is realized.
I could give you some insight to that.
No, go ahead.
Yep.
It definitely.
As I was growing into adulthood, there was HOAs and homeowners associations, but the whole idea about them is that this down in L.A. was exclusivity. And there would be roads that would be blocked off. Only the owners could access. And if inside that area were parks and swimming pools and amenities, that would be for the use of the owners. And it seems as though that, am I aware of this? I mean, I live in a private residence, so I don't live amongst a community of people. But are we talking about HOAs as being available to anybody to drive through and to park and use?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We are. So how does anybody want to even pay for that as a homeowner, pay for the privilege of an association?
That's the typical scenario for subdivision these days.
Well, I think it's wrong.
Well, often it's used to fund, the lighting and irrigation along the planter strips and things like that.
I think the reality of HOA's existence is kind of, that's a water under the bridge kind of a thing. I don't disagree with your notion, but it has become, again, it's back to policy and philosophy, right? But jurisdictions today, our city included, as a way to control costs and therefore control taxes, look to put certain cost into another bucket, right? And so one is HOA for the responsibility of landscape, their small parks, lighting within them, the sidewalks, you know, it's becoming more and more, right, over time. But it's a path, it's a choice that we've sort of made.
HOA, do you have your private grounds maintained for you? Do you have your lawn mowed?
Mm-hmm. Not your private grounds.
What are you paying for?
But we use the example of Cedar Falls. I've got, of course, a pretty good background in those costs and the way that works. So to your question, the dues, you know, that so most developers are going to, first off, they're going to maintain until the point at which they turn it over to the private homeowners association, right? And different ones have different policies on how they do that, somewhere between 50 and 100% sold, right? But the budget is basically composed of what an estimate for annual maintenance costs are, plus reserve funds, just like you would have in a, say, a condo development, right? So they're collecting something for the future. So Cedar Falls, for instance, is collecting something towards the eventual replacement of playground equipment, towards the eventual replacement of landscaping over time and such like that, not just annual, mowing, weeding, instance, but you've got to be assuming that at some point X is going to wear out, right?
But, so okay, but if I have my neighbors out of the area and they're using my parks, I want to take my family out and have a picnic and it's being used by everybody else, why the hell am I going to be paying for a park maintenance?
Well, that's kind of why I brought the question.
So to your point, the other opposite example is the city of Snoqualmie and developing Snoqualmie Ridge made a policy call that our mini parks are going to be public and we're going to fund them and they'll be open to all. So that has other ramifications for budget, but that's a policy choice they made.
Right. And so their parks department is much larger, their parks budget is much larger, therefore the tax is higher to maintain those. But, exactly as Mike's saying, they chose, there were going to be so many of them, and the philosophy was these are all city assets.
Does the Ridge Owners Association, what's their participation in?
I don't think that, I'm not aware of any private parks, but there's a lot of greenbelt kind of areas and buffers and things like that that the HOA then maintains.
So it's a ridge wide, all of the homeowners pay into the ridge.
You have both an entire Snoqualmie Ridge HOA, and then certain subdivisions have subs, so like condo associate, townhome associations is part wrapped into that, right? Yeah.
So I have a, and I probably should know this, but what happens to the level of service standards for parks and open space and playgrounds when a mini park is handed over to the HOA? Does it drop off of the city's role that we're no longer providing that service to the community as a whole?
It's just not counted in our level of service because it's not a public facility.
So is that going to be, over time, then be counterproductive to us if we're not gaining new open space, if we're handing it over to HOA? So is that such a small...
I don't think we have a standard for mini parks, though. We've got a standard for neighborhood
parks and
community parks.
And sports courts. But oftentimes, I guess I'm thinking of Side View Park that has sports courts. That's not a mini park, and that wouldn't fall within that 2.5-acre size. But we also don't specify what can and cannot go.
We do say...
There's examples of what, but should we be more specific in making sure that we're not losing that level of standard if someone else is taking ownership of it?
Yeah, so we don't, if it's going into a private park, we don't count it at all towards our level of service standard.
So that would actually have the reverse impact, I believe, to what you're asking, right? If we're not counting it, we actually have a higher level of service than we're counting, albeit probably fairly minor. Does that make sense?
On paper.
Well, in actuality. If I have a level of service that says I should have X number of acres, and I'm only counting the public acres, left out that I actually do have 30 more acres in little mini parks all around. That was kind of my...
With it, I think, is the public. Your public works department may come and turn around and say, well, you know, we need XYZ staff for every acre and for every resident, and, you know, and then they flip that coin over. Lopsided standard, although the number of parks hasn't changed, they have more residents.
Right.
But those residents are. I was going to comment on that. I think, and I kind of agree where you started with this conversation. You get into these larger parks, these 2.5-acre parks. Those are at some level almost destinations for some people, depending on where they're located. And to restrict them to HOAs, I think could be a bad practice because they can then restrict people from using them. The other part of it is how do we get into the architecture of what the amenities are going to be in those? Could they just have this large 2.5-acre piece of unmanaged open space that they're calling their park, but there's no features in it whatsoever for that neighborhood? It's kind of counterintuitive to me. I get the neighborhood park or the pocket park, those small parks. I think those, at the end of the day, those are amenities that are going to draw people to that neighborhood to want to live there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be in their interest, that HOA's interest, to maintain those at a higher level. If you get into these larger areas and these bigger parks, I think that's a little bit different. The other question I had, I guess, is with these larger parks, is this going to stifle larger parks? Is the developer going to choose to build 2 or 3 smaller parks versus the 1 bigger park?
Well, it possibly could, because they may wish to turn it over to the city. There's the advantage of that.
Mm-hmm.
They get the credit, but the city is maintaining. So if you take away that, or if the council chooses not to do that, that's
right.
Not it.
Yeah.
Is Side View an HOA?
Side View is a public park in the Side View neighborhood.
That's a beautiful environment there. I don't know why we can't develop more of that. swales in there. I mean, it's just gorgeous.
It's a good example, though, of where we made this that policy change and we're considering another step in it. So the Sideview neighborhood, which has an HOA for maintaining certain areas, does not have the burden of maintaining that park. So that means it's spread amongst all of us as taxpayers. Whereas this next community of the Toll Brothers, whatever it's now called, from Sigali, actually would all of that burden would be on that HOA.
So
if I was a member of that HOA, I'd be saying, well, wait a minute, I'm paying a piece for this, but I'm paying all of this.
So I don't know where this specific comment originated. This came out of council committee. That was a suggestion. But I have heard comments in the past about the Sideview Neighborhood Park that people feel like that's used primarily just by the residents of that neighborhood, and therefore it should be maintained and paid for by that neighborhood.
So as a resident of the Sideview Neighborhood and the vice president of the HOA, part of the reason why I'm on the Parks Commission is because of this debate we've been having with the city. The HOA has been battling with the city about maintaining those parks to a certain standard because we see cars parked in there. There's people that are walking through that neighborhood. It's part of the connectivity. It is a beautiful park. I agree with that. That's why we continue to advocate. And that's why I got on the board, actually, is because I heard that from HOA staff that the city said those are our parks, so we're trying to, and they actually used money. There was this great partnership that they came up with where the HOA took some of their reserve funds and had the city install new playground equipment. Mm-hmm. My first question, why isn't the city doing that? We're paying taxes for that. That's where this comment came up. That, well, they feel that they're our parks. Well, you feel that way because you're letting them say that.
I wouldn't feel comfortable about going to some of these small pocket parks because they clearly look like they're really for the people that live around them. So I wouldn't feel comfortable going there with a big family gathering to have a big picnic laid out in the lots and use all the facilities. Because I wouldn't feel like it was for me to use, even though there's no sign saying I can't use it. But the larger parks do give me a chance to feel like I can go there with a crowd and lay out. And we don't have that, we don't seem to have that many kind of parks in the community to do that with.
I'm sitting here trying to listen to all this. I think with the bigger parks like this, I think maybe the better option is a compromise. What we talked about before with maybe a split between the HOA and the city, rather than having the common sense saying at the city's discretion of saying just handing it all away over to the HOA, is a better option just to say on these larger 2.5 acre parks, it's a 50-50 split between the HOA and city and not having that option. That way, like Sideview, the city can't say it's not our problem. The HOA doesn't have to take on all that burden. Maybe that's...
I think that would lead to a lot of contention and confusion.
Well, it already is the way it is, though, right?
Well, no, because it was clear in the Sideview documents when the property was conveyed to the city that they're actually city parks and they're owned by the city and they're used for public purpose. Mm-hmm. What they're trying to say now is that these are HOA parks, you know, and these are going to be for HOA residents used by the HOA members.
If you have a city general taxpayer putting into the maintenance of this, you can now have that option of enforcing it open to the public, right? If it's an HOA park, you run the risk, like we talked about, of them closing it up to public access. It's just we're paying for it wholly. You can't use it. The public can't use it for just everybody in this development. Mm-hmm. If there's public money going into it, that would give. I would assume legally that would give us the option of ensuring that it stays open to the public, right?
And I might venture to say that HOA parks does great damage to the vision of what this community is. We look at our vision statement. We have parks that are basically closed off to people who have to walking by us. I like this. Take a restroom, sit down, and sometimes I'm sorry, you have to move on. You know, that would not feel like a very friendly community to me if we have a lot of that going on around here.
Our sign that says for HOA residents only, which is what's going on right now.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to me as you're bringing it up, and I hadn't thought about this when I was making my original comment. But I now 3 to 5 times a week go through your park. I walk through the neighborhood.
He's running through it all the time.
Right. I use the trail, I sit on the bench, right? Maybe I'll learn to play basketball again and use that. But at any point, as I think about that, I'm intrigued by James's notion of some sort of a shared responsibility, which kind of grows out of a recognition that the predominant user will be the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. But they're being, so I'm intrigued by that. I'm a little concerned that it might be unworkable. And so I'm more persuaded by the notion of, as we think about trying to more and more connect our trails, to Commissioner Ryan's thought of, well, that ought to be part of the entire system that we're trying to put together and pull. So
I'm certain, just to kind of keep us be able to move on to the next one, I think I'm hearing consensus that you generally disagree with this suggested edit. And just leave it as.
Kind of like that call. Is there anyone supporting?
Yeah. I just add to the comment that maybe perhaps one of the criteria is if it's along an existing trail network or a planned trail network, then it really is a public park, regardless of the size.
Yeah.
Not that we want developers to purposely move parks away from the trail corridors, but that would provide us the goal of having a truly connected.
So to Mike's request, without objection, I'm saying we agree, strike the proposed edit.
Yeah.
Okay. Should we go page by page? We've got Ron Rob's edits, but sorry, Commissioner McFarland.
Thanks. Well, again, I think I'll summarize this. I am sympathetic to what the city council and staff is suggesting in regard to potential abuse by a developer in combining, you know, the storm features. And I think we do need to be mindful of that. I guess this is where I'm looking for the third way, because I do believe that there can be reasonable co-location that works. And I cited, you know, a couple of examples there, and I heard another one just earlier tonight. So I'm just kind of suggesting, again, think of that, the choice that we're making. Again, we're limited in land. We're trying to utilize our spaces as best we can. Roads take a certain amount. House is going to take a certain amount. We want the parks, but we have to deal with stormwater, and so that's going to be a feature. And so it's how do we best do it, and we've been trying many different ways. What I would hate to see us get back to is the pipe and pond, because to me the ugliest thing in any development is the fenced-off pond that's full of weeds, except for the few times that it's, you know, full of water. And so that's kind of where my brain is when I'm making the comment of, let's not eliminate the possibility altogether, but if there's something that staff could do that gives them a better hammer in how they would be designed or used or where it would be appropriate, you know, is it, so the one that you pointed out, Mike, is, but are we essentially creating a new wetland, and maybe it's a boardwalk through there with some benches, and over time we've got a little wetland trail. I don't know, but
I think, in my perspective, the floodplain compensatory storage is the more problematic, at least in what we've seen so far, because it's big amounts of grading, and you're creating a hole to fill.
Sure.
The stormwater one is problematic on a small scale, but when you have a large area to deal with, such as with Torgerson Park, you can spread that out and have a fairly wide area that can infiltrate without making too much impact. When you're on a small scale, and this is the example with the East Grove neighborhood where they did this with the little park within the Lone Earth, they tried to incorporate stormwater in there, and that just winds up being all you can do. So it's kind of a scale issue more than.
As an example, the Tannerwood Park, is that stormwater in that park?
The large park in Tannerwood actually has a storm vault underneath it, right?
Because I feel like that's a good way to handle this, right? It's a nice green area that still becomes
Cedar Falls is similar to that, correct? Like the lower points that are all vegetated, and then the upper part is where the lawn is in the parks. That's stormwater feature, correct, or compensatory storage excavation?
Yeah. So they, within Cedar Falls, they've got the bioswales.
Yeah. Right.
They have the kind of big Warner parks again.
Moon-looking thing.
Yeah. Right. And at the edge of those, they have the bioswale, but not within the park itself.
Right.
And that seems to work.
Mm-hmm. Could we maybe put like another, I don't know how it would work with the reference and everything, but just like allow for like a director a review or a director approval, something that leaves it open-ended. So if you come in with a pretty good innovative proposal, it allows it at the discretion of the city to let that move forward. Not saying yes or no either way, but allow, like Rob's saying, a little bit of compromise there. I don't know how that fits in with that, but for a director approval or consider, I don't know how it would be worded, but some.
What are the choices they have for the
for storage?
Yeah, I heard the vault.
So the vault, that still would work under this, because this says at-grade stormwater features.
Right.
You can put it underground and still have a park over it.
Usable space for the park, especially year-round,
mm-hmm.
then that should be the target, right?
Yeah. And then again, the bioswales. The intent here is that we're not filling the park with what's needed for the neighborhood as a whole. So if it's stormwater features necessary for the park, sure, put that in the park. But we don't want to see the homes of the whole street draining to the park.
Yeah.
And that's where the problem is.
Yeah.
So is there something to take action on regarding these comments? I mean, Rob, are you proposing that these be stricken?
I'm not going to propose it to be stricken. I wanted to draw the attention to that there is a trade-off more than just saying, oh yeah, having a really wet, muddy park isn't what we're looking for, and I agree with that. But there is that doubling of space, so to speak, and additional usage. And again, I think there are opportunities for overlap or perhaps more creative ways.
Yeah.
But I'd be more comfortable if there was something simple to leave it in the hands of staff to work with an applicant for reason. That'd be great. But if staff's not comfortable.
Well, I think ultimately we have to approve something or propose something different.
I have a couple of thoughts. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think we want to encourage more natural drainage control rather than just simply digging a hole and putting a vault in there.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I also understand the problem that, let's say you have a 1-acre park required by our code for a particular subdivision, and the storm drain is going to take up a quarter of that. So that's the problem today, mm-hmm. right? So what if we say if you do the above ground storage, you get to count 50% of that toward as part of the parkland. So if you need a half acre for storm drainage, you get to count a quarter acre of that to help make up your 1 acre required parkland or something like that.
We have a lot of natural drainage, a lot of bioswales throughout neighborhoods now. Developers really take advantage of that here, especially with our groundwater. We have high groundwater throughout this area of town, and so a stormwater pond would have to be huge accordingly, so they use a lot of bioswales.
Right.
So that could wind up eating a lot of the park space, but kind of the converse of your idea, if we say no more than such percentage of a park can incorporate stormwater, maybe
that's
that gets
exactly,
to the...
Yeah, I may not have been real eloquent about how I was saying it, but that's the idea, is put some limitation on it so it doesn't take up the whole park.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be part of the criteria. If we give the director the ability to have flexibility, there should be some sort of criteria.
Yeah, I agree.
And that could be one of a number of criteria.
At the discretion of the developer, up to 10% of, I don't know, 10% is the right...
At the discretion of the developer and
well,
the director.
Or is it of the I was thinking of it kind of in the reverse, is that the director can allow up to X percent,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. which would give that flexibility to say, yeah, you know, in this instance, this could work.
Yeah.
You know.
So, Mike, are you going to take a stab at something?
Yeah.
And you were talking about how on smaller, I think you said on smaller parks, it's more of a problem than a larger park.
Yeah, it is.
So you could come up with a small sliding scale.
For parks greater than a quarter of an acre, exactly. Which is a mini park.
Yeah.
At the discretion of the developer, up to 10% of the park area may be used for at-grade natural stormwater infiltration.
Yeah, I think the natural feature.
Mm-hmm. You know, fellas, folks, I've been looking at that picture over there on that poster. And,
the nice storm facility, isn't it?
That's where I grew up. I had to walk about, ride my bike about 4 miles and walk about 3 miles to get to that kind of setting. But when I got there with my dog, about her age, I thought it was some other world. You know, it really was. It wasn't my neighborhood. I had left my neighborhood, and I went down streets, and I crossed streets. Finally, my bike wouldn't get me there anymore, so I left my bike, I chained it up to a post, and went walking. And I got to a spot like that. And these pocket parks in the communities would stop kids from getting out of their community. It doesn't let them go explore all the wonder we have around here. We have plenty of trails, but they aren't used to explore and to fantasize a play world that you're in when you're a kid. You're kind of just drawn to the pocket park, and you swing and swing as you get tired of that, and you just watch television. And I'd like to see more opportunities for youngsters to get more into the grandeur of our community, what is really out there, was to explore and to fantasize and get away from these pocket parks. They just stop kids, in my opinion.
That's why we've got a fantastic trail network planned throughout the city to provide those connections.
So let's not worry about these pocket parks. Let's get these trails perfected so kids know how to navigate them and get out and explore and come back and tell mom and dad, look at the rock I found. And because I never lived in a place like this. I lived in Pasadena, California, and I had to really work to get away from the urban areas so I could explore. And here, kids don't have to go that far. But we don't even allow them to try to explore because we stop them with these little pocket parks.
I think some of those are age dependent. You know, I've got a 13-year-old son who gets on his bike, and we've got a playground right out our back door into a park, and we're pretty fortunate. But he gets on his bike with his friends, and they ride over beside you because they have the zip line, which is more age appropriate. So, I mean, really, I think it's how we design our parks and age groups anyway.
I agree. Wood River had I don't know if it's a requisite requirement for the development, but they had they called the coffee trail that went all the way around the development. A continuous trail that our kids got to enjoy, like you're saying, that it was in the woods, there were cougar, you know. Yeah. But, so I don't know, do you think, Rob, that was way before?
Well, Wood River would have been designed under King County standards, okay. Which were not anywhere close to what our current city standards are. But I don't know enough of the history to know if that was a requirement by King County or whether the developer chose that for some other reason. But it goes back quite a ways.
Wood River doesn't have a park, does it?
No, it has no park. It has no gutters, no curb.
But that's why
no I thought it was King
County. Yeah, I'm just sitting here thinking about it. I'm like, yeah. Oh, there's no park in there.
So, I don't know if the trail exists. I know that part of it might have been taken away with the development.
Well, there goes the 140 frontage. I know there's that trail, but
they do have a tract and a trail that goes along the back along the river too. It's private though, and they're very particular about that being
that's
private.
Right. That's right.
So the transition, we had talked about the stormwater and the retention requirements.
Mm-hmm.
Are we ready to move on? You've got some. You're going to go.
Yeah, I'm comfortable with what Mike's come up with.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I think from a process standpoint, I think we're definitely looking at revisiting this at a future
meeting to see some of the...
Well, I guess that's a question. I've got a sentence that I could offer right now on this issue. If there's other issues, we can...
I'm agreeing with these two over here on what the sliding scale and then allowing some innovation with the stormwater features within the park.
Gary, I was going to suggest maybe even a slightly different... If we're generally comfortable with the language, and I think is perfect, well, from my perspective, we might still be able to move forward on passage depending on the bulk of this, because it's still going to go back to the committee, who's then, I'm hoping, going to look at what our input or sentiment has been. And if it needs some more refining, they're going to do the refining anyway. That's
no, I understand. I just right now we're spending a lot of time on kind of policy issues, and some of these certainly have some complexity and nuance to them. Mm-hmm. And we've got a number of comments yet to get to that but if we're going to make proposed changes tonight, then I think we have to propose a change that addresses the comment, take some action on that so that we can keep moving forward. Otherwise, we're basically giving you some action items, Mike, to craft some language that you think gets to the consensus of the conversation that we can consider somewhere down the road.
And I'll do some wordsmithing to make it fit right within the context of the provision, but right now I think the idea is for parks over a quarter of an acre at the discretion of the director, up to 10% of the area of a park may be used for natural stormwater infiltration features.
And I support that as meeting.
I think I'm sure.
Is that consensus?
Yeah. You have to define that stormwater features.
I think that's probably well enough understood, including bioswales. Not just bioswales or
retardants. It's probably defined somewhere.
Yeah.
So in that regard, Mr. Chair, I think the third item here.
Grass doesn't count as a natural feature.
I think this third separate concept here that I proposed is the one about halfway down page two, where it's the discussion of are we counting acreage or units and what have you, and I'm not going to push that one at all. I just, again, I'm highlighting there are some trade-offs there. If the consensus of the group is you're comfortable with what's being proposed, I have no change.
I like the concept. Personally, it's the factors being driven by the unit, which ultimately drives the number of people. So I'm comfortable with that because that's going to drive the park settlement.
The last one at the bottom of the page is just a duplicate of the one we already decided, right?
Yeah. So that would go then as well?
That would get stricken, right?
Consensus on that?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're on page three.
Yes.
Page three, middle. Yeah, that's the same as the previous, so the same thing again applies. I'm not really quite sure how we end up with the same stuff, but.
This is a multifamily section.
Do you have a different feeling about multifamily, Mike? That might be.
I do, because it's a higher density and smaller spaces generally, so you may not want to have some. There's less room to play with.
And you say would diminish, and I think that leaves some interpretation.
Yeah.
I'm fine with the proposed edited language. Comment there is really I think that's heading in the right direction. It's probably for another time to figure other levers. But
were you talking about affordable housing?
Yeah.
There? Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I kind of I was thinking that when I read the comment and I saw yours. Yeah, I kind of agree.
And I think from my perspective that whole area of affordable housing and how to incentivize it is much bigger than this. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's something that could come back at a future time.
So he stays as written?
I'm good as written.
All right. dates for, is that the next set for
next
you?
Next thing that I have.
Okay.
I have something for page 5.
Page 5?
Yeah. Is it possible to find a picture of something that shows what you're looking for rather than not?
I agree. Maybe like
the courts and fields one. You have a picture, but then in your note you say this is not depicted in the picture above.
Where's that at?
For the courts, field, etc., the picture, the notation underneath the picture.
Okay.
You say this, and then you need lines and everything, but that's not in the picture you show.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So maybe if we can find one.
I think we've got that now.
Take a picture inside you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's actually the... It's the same court these days, but we striped it now. Right. So.
Oh, there you go. Update the picture
before and after.
Yeah.
Your tax dollars.
We'll catch.
All right. That's it.
So again, I guess this is me at the top. Just a feeling that may be again a shifting of responsibility. In other words, if you're not on page with that, the thinking is if it is an easement granted, the responsibility, the underlying ownership, and therefore responsibility may still lie with the property owner or the HOA, and therefore might be, okay, public right to use, but I got to pay for it.
The context that might be a little different is that that's often through green belts. So the benefit of the green belt is often the adjacent residents that get that extra sense of privacy. It's not necessarily a park. Mm-hmm. And the Tanner Road neighborhood actually wanted to maintain it as private for that circumstance. So we said, okay, give us an easement. And the easement can include the city taking on the liability of the trail itself. And they were happy with that.
Wouldn't an easement inherently usually come with an ingress egress, which would then allow you to keep them from closing the trail?
Yeah.
That's entirely the point of it. Right, yeah.
Come with a lot of different things. What the requirements are for what's negotiated.
For the easement, right? The levee trail and the way it went, so where towards you get into those areas that are privately owned. If they look at developing them, they can have an easement which will allow the connectivity to occur. And they can design their structure, their development around it. Oh, I like it.
Again, I'm not advocating change. I pull it out. If you get it and you're good with it, I'm okay.
Okay. I'm fine with it.
Okay.
Easement also could allow the square footage of that easement to be included toward lot area or toward density count, whereas it was a dedicated tract, it might not. So that would be a potential benefit to the developer.
It definitely is.
Because that could be a large property, that could be a lot of land.
So my next comment there related to trail width was just simply, does that apply now to everything or really?
So we were primarily talking about the Tanner Trail and the levees. So it's an 8-foot standard except with the Tanner Trail and the levees. And we said including but not limited to, because we don't want to have some future circumstance where we think of something that's really should be 10.
Right.
And that's mainly because of grants, correct?
That's the minimum standard.
10.
Yes, and it doesn't have to be paved. Mm-hmm. It could be a soft surface trail in many cases, but that's the standard.
Yeah, I think part of my thinking there was there may be even more than just those two trails that ought to be that larger standard.
Gotcha.
But not everything should be. Mm-hmm. And I would even get killed for this one. I could advocate that some trails might even be narrower than 8 feet. Mm-hmm. Again, it's that idea, just like we do streets. Some need to be wide because they're the major arterials.
So number 4 on that list, B4, the Tanner Trail shall include blah, blah, blah. Do you want to leave that more open-ended in the event that there's another larger trail that pops up and you want to include lighting because of its location?
Major trails.
So seems restrictive if it's just talking about Tanner Trail. But we're trying to exclude certain trails as well.
We can always add something that isn't specifically called for in the standards. This was just saying this is one that really needs attention.
Because of its location.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just thinking down the road. If there's another trail that pops up that's similar to that, does this allow you to do that?
It does, yeah.
If you got rid of that first sentence in number four, does the second sentence about the lighting fixtures and specs take care of what you're talking about in the first sentence?
Not necessarily, because it's lighting's not required on our trails.
Okay.
And there's a lot of circumstances where we don't want lighting.
Right.
We don't by code light our parks either.
Right.
But some parks may need to be relooked at.
Okay. Just trying to look at maybe.
Would lighting discourage transient use during night?
Also invite people. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It just helps. But that's kind of part of the reason for the lighting, right, is to help me get from A to B. That's why I like it.
We've been thinking about this, too, with the Tanner Trail, because we're starting to plan for our City Hall trail connection and then some other trail connections down further towards the new Dahlgren apartments. And the idea that we're coming up with for the lighting is not lighting like we're illuminating the trail, it's more kind of points of refuge. Mm-hmm. So if you think of the trail that goes up Snoqualmie Ridge on the parkway, that doesn't provide illumination of the trail, but it does provide you with a spot every 80 feet or whatever that distance is that you can be seen, and it provides a little bit of more of a safe, comfortable feel when you're...
It gives you a target, too.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I'm on a trail, it's just a matter of where did it go.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't have any proposed change, just a question.
Any proposed changes to that subject?
No, I just want to make sure it wasn't too restrictive.
I think the last one on six for me is just a question, Mike.
Yeah, so on the lighting, we do address that in our... we have our street lighting standards, but we also have our off-site or off-street lighting standards, and that does include park areas.
That covers it.
Okay. So, I guess my question: what does this specifically apply to? It's because it says all parks should, and then the city encourages. So, is it actually saying that someone has to do something specific, or is it just like, hey, we like sustainability, do this?
But a lot of these issues are already addressed, like preserve soil permeability. Mm-hmm. We've got our new landscape standards that say you shall amend the soils in areas as appropriate. Minimize night light pollution. Our light regulations mm-hmm. require full cutoff lighting, minimized light at property lines and so forth. So it just feels, whenever we can simplify a regulation, I want to do that.
I guess I'll just push it one step further in that regard, though, in the idea of minimizing nightlight. It's some of that is, do you have a light or not? Not just is it a full cutoff or not. Mm-hmm. I think we had this conversation back when we redid the street lighting on North Bend Way, west of Bendigo, right? It was like, that's just like lit up like a Christmas tree now versus other neighborhoods. I mean, you'd have a hard time getting lost there, right? You'd also have a really hard time trying to see the night sky above you. And so I think I just wanted to be sure that, hey, we don't need to light up the whole world here.
So you're suggesting about potentially keeping that on there?
I'm drawing attention. The first thing was the question to Mike was, well, do you feel we've got that covered in another code section? And your answer.
So we don't require lighting.
Yeah.
In offsite, the only place that we do require it now is parking lots.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise,
I guess in that respect, though, because we don't require it by definition, then we've minimized it. So it's okay to strike.
Right.
So all of these strike-throughs would remain that?
Exactly. I'm saying I'm okay with that if that's the, if it's covered in work.
Everybody good with that?
Good with that.
All right. Any other comments, questions, suggestions?
I have one just general comment. I didn't know here, and it seems like the buzz term now is accessible parks, you know, in the region.
Oh, yeah.
Is this revision an opportunity to, or is that something we should consider adding, especially for those larger parks? Accessibility is a newer standard. Or can we just do that within the review? And is this the right time to do it?
I wish I knew more about ADA than I do. I don't, these are specific to parks developed within neighborhoods, and I don't know what is required from ADA for individual parks like that.
That's a great question.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. I'd like to know that.
Yeah.
I just think of the conversation that we had at the last open house over at the site when they were talking about some of the parks. And
yeah.
Kind of trailhead, actually, what it was. Wants to take his dad out in his wheelchair. That's the accessibility. That's clearly a contemporary topic.
Because there's ADA and then there's ABA, I believe, right? Which is like a, right below ADA.
So familiar.
It's like trails that are, there's just a, it's a lower threshold of design standard for ABA.
What does it stand for?
I'll email it to you if I can find it. I was working on a project that involved it for some grant stuff, but I know, like, I'm City of Monroe, they don't require ADA accessible for their neighborhood parks or their multifamily parks. But if you count, like, rooftop decks or something, that needs to be ADA accessible, but that's
yeah. What I know. No, I think it's worthwhile to say something about comply with requirements with ADA as appropriate, and that's just a trigger for us when reviewing the review to think, what are you doing for this?
Inclusive.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to see where the appropriate place to put that. It could go under sustainability. I'm trying to think if there's a better spot.
Yeah, I think that's what I can. Required recreational space shall be, you know, suitable for recreation by residents. You know, are you, is it exclusive in excluding the ADA requirements?
Is it something that would fall under at the bottom of page 3 is 1725060? That's where you're describing minimum park features, right? For different classes.
Yeah, different.
Well, it goes from mini to the larger, right? But kind of a, I think, Mark, to what you're bringing up, it does seem like a scalable, it's not something you'd want to require in any park. Mm-hmm. But if you're talking that more regional trail, should that be part of the evaluation? Mm-hmm. Or is it, if it's a large park, should there be something in there to ensure that, right? That,
right.
That
or even could it go into the definitions badge?
Yeah.
A piece in there, and then it leaves the discretion about, you know, this is logical place. Accessible.
Something in the purpose statement might be good too.
Mm. And providing accessibility to all
page,
North Bend
one,
or to all.
One, right up on one.
I don't see harm in having it in two places, but that it makes, I think it fits really well in the purpose.
Mm-hmm. It also applies to the trails,
right,
that connect to trails such as Cana Trail, which is ADA.
Mm-hmm.
Which again, then, if we bring it right up front to purpose, that covers the whole
intersection.
Yeah. So, Mike, what do you think that language would be?
Something in the purpose section about and providing accessibility to all residents and abilities. Does that sound generally right? And then something in the play infrastructure section about compliance with all applicable ADA standards. And then it's, I'm not getting into the details of those, but it's a trigger for us when we're reviewing it to see it.
I One really minor suggestion for purpose, you said residents mm-hmm. of all abilities, let's say people with all abilities.
Okay, yes.
Residents implies that it's only residents.
Yeah.
We're doing this.
Well, we're not letting other outsiders in.
Am I an insider or an outsider?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Residents and guests only.
Yeah, residents.
Everybody but you, Dick, and James.
Right.
So, Mike, you've got that. Everybody comfortable with that? Okay. Any other comments, questions, suggestions?
Did we cover Eric's things?
When I briefly read it, he was sort of supporting.
HOAs.
Yeah.
And then he recommended the city school with the HOAs as policy.
Mr. Chair, did you want to close the public meeting?
Well, let's just do. It feels like we're prepared to take action. Is there general consensus? If so, then I think it's appropriate to close the public hearing before we do that. So I will officially close the public hearing at 8:29 on my iPhone. Now, procedurally, if we're going to take action, are we taking action as two separate commissions?
I think we should, yeah.
Okay, is there a preferred sequence? It doesn't matter. Okay.
No.
All right. Parks Commission, do you want to make a motion and take action?
Yes. Ask the Park Commission to make a motion to approve the updated residential recreation and common space requirements as provided at the tonight's meeting, the chapter 1725, with the noted comments collected at this evening's meeting.
Second. I agree.
Once you guys have not sure you are, they're never going to get that on there.
We've got it. I've got Mike, the notes, and then Tom listens to the audio.
It never comes out that way, Mike.
Okay.
Well, that's because he careers that is your name. Did you guys vote?
All in favor? Aye.
Okay.
All right. Planning Commission, is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move that the amendments to NBMC 1725 residential recreation and common space requirements and the trail and bicycle map of the parks element of the comprehensive plan as amended this evening be approved.
I'll second.
Okay. There's been a motion by Commissioner McFarland, seconded by Commissioner Bovers to approve. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None opposed. Motion carries.
Great. All right. I've got just something for Mike. Mm-hmm. On the last page of your staff report, I noticed that the parks, well, you had a recommendation here, but Parks Commission recommendation is different than the Planning Commission recommendation. The Parks Commission mentions the code amendment.
Oh, okay.
They just have they just have different wording.
I'll look at those and make sure they're the same.
Right. And the staff recommendations are a little bit different.
Okay.
So you have three different ones, I think.
Thank you.
Pick the best.
Pick the favorite.
These staff reports are prepared in haste. Haste.
Cut and paste. You delete by mistake. Half a sentence disappears.
Do you need anything further from us on this topic?
No, this was... Okay. Quick and efficient tonight. I need to invite the Parks Commission more often.
Great discussion. All right. So that will conclude the joint meeting and public hearing on a parks element map. Is there any other business for the Planning Commission tonight?
Just a note, our upcoming agenda, we're going to bring to you some temporary use regulation amendments to consider food trucks and some... longer-term temporary uses, providing a little bit more flexibility there. And then at your meeting after that, we'll be coming back to the marijuana retail issue, the public hearing.
Okay.
And that was one of my questions I was going to have. And then I just, for good over the order, if you... you haven't seen a posting about it, it's not a open to the public. It was an invitation only, but Umpqua Bank is hosting a affordable housing forum in March, inviting a lot of elected officials, both Snoqualmie, North Bend, and county at large, and other selected people to reinvigorate that conversation. And the intent, as I understand it, of that meeting is to spark and therefore go forward to a more town hall style conversation on affordable housing and bringing the wider public in. And so something that I would just encourage that you
also generate more deposits to Rockwood's bank.
That's not a bad thing. He's a local bank.
Yeah. Anything else good at your time?
That is March 22nd, I believe.
It's a Friday.
It's most all day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, all day.
Yeah. It's something like 10 to 4.
Okay.
It's all okay. Meeting.
Cool. I have one thing for parks. Mm-hmm. Do you know when the fence that's around the new playground and E.J. Robish is going to get taken down?
A new fence at...
There's a fence that's around
fence.
Oh, no. I can ask about that.
Yes. Yeah, so, I went by there tonight on my way.
Yeah.
That's just the numbers there are too for the city. Please come and visit. I don't know if it got delayed with the snow.
Yeah, that's what
yeah.
I was thinking as well. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah.
Anything else? Is the order before we adjourn? All right.
Move to adjourn.
Do we
second. Hey. 9 seconds.
We have a motion to adjourn tonight's meeting that's been seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? We are adjourned at 8:35.
Yeah. Wow.